Hello, my name's Jack Leder, and this is my favourite year. So, in this podcast, we get guests from the worlds of comedy, entertainment, anywhere, people off the street, we'll get anyone, and we discuss their favourite year from history or their favourite year from their life, and we just dedicate a whole hour, half an hour, whatever it is, to that year from history. And it's fun, it's interesting, it's insightful, and hopefully entertaining for you. Do you have a favourite year? Yes, you do. Do you have a favourite year? Yes, I got two. But for this podcast, you must pick one. And then I guess I'll stop singing this song. So, hello Scott.
Hi Jack.
You alright mate?
I'm good, yeah, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad. So, what year were you born?
79.
Jeez, are you...
don't do that, jeez. Jeez, you're an antique. 79, so I would be 17.
17, because I was 2.
I know, I could have been your babysitter.
You could have been my dad.
possibly might be, I don't know. But yeah, 17 in 1996.
And was it a good year for a 17-year-old?
Great year. I think, looking back, I think it's been a great... There was so much going on. It felt like a great year. And I think when you're sort of 17, it's sort of that age where everything's ahead of you, isn't it? There's so much potential. And it's only when you sort of get a bit further on, you think, should have done something with that, rather than just enjoy it. But yeah, great time to be 17.
And where in the country was you?
I was living at home with my parents in Pontefract in Yorkshire. And I was doing A-levels. I was doing A-level art, which was our first year, I think, wasn't it? 96, so yeah. It was around that time. So I was doing I was at college doing that. So it was like sort of really, you've almost left home, but not quite. But then you've still got the comfort of the fact that you get your meals and your washing done, even though you got to put up with psychopaths and a shower that clearly doesn't work, which is still the same situation. It's still in the same house.
So it's Pontefract in the middle of nowhere, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's Ponte Carlo, I think you'll find the locals call it, Jack. But it's between Wakefield and Leeds, but nothing going on. But I used to get the bus every day from there to college. It was a long bus journey, but just had a Walkman on. And that's really a good era to be 17 and have a Walkman with Britpop as well. So it's all good. It all fitted together.
And what were you doing in your art A level? What did they do back then?
Well, obviously, that was the era as well of Damien Hirst. What did you back then? Like the carving on slate.
Well, of course, they hadn't invented pens.
Dunsey's hats yeah, in the corner.
We had Mona Lisa come in and pose, live drawing. No, it was like the era of Damien Hirst cutting sharks in half and putting them in formaldehyde. Okay. So that I thought, yeah, I want to do that. But then what actually that meant was me drawing fruit. So I was not cutting it. But then like we had quite a cool art department. So I did like photography. And one guy who was like, I think on reflection, he was probably smoking a lot of weed. But he was like, yeah, just do what you like, you know, just express yourself. I was like, can I go down a scrapyard and get some metal to make a sculpture? Yeah, fine. Didn't even check if I had a tetanus. Just like, go down. It's probably illegal, but yeah, go for it, you know. So we did that. And then I did a lot of photography. And still to this day, I've always wanted a dark room. And I'm threatening my missus saying that I'm going to get a shed and develop photographs all day. Because it's like, you used to go in the dark room, and it's just like you go in there, and it's that sort of like, I don't know if you've ever done photography, you used to have to crack the film open, the black and white film. It's before digital, and you used to have to develop it in the dark. And it was like sort of being a sleight of hand magician. And sort of like, you'd do it like, and then you could expose the negatives and make photographs.
Was this back when you went into them shops with them little cameras as well?
Yeah, so you had a proper camera and then like black and white film, and then you just develop photographs, but like you could be in there for days, and like the smell of the developer would get you high as a kite. But it was brilliant, and like I still miss it. I think this is a problem. There's a couple of comics on the circuit who are about my age, who've got kids, and they look back at the 90s with sort of like a fear of sort of like, oh my God, that was our 60s, I suppose, in a weird way. And I sort of look back
and
at it.
And you missed it. You didn't really.
Yeah, and I feel
it.
Like going back, I had a great time, but I had like, I think like when I was doing things, like you sort of forget that that was the there was like a bit of a movement going on, like Britpop, and I was doing my art A level and stuff, and now like I'm driving a Kia sports wagon. It all feels a little bit distant, but that's what I was up to, yeah. And
I'd have probably passed the art A level though, because if I was shitting in like diapers and that, I'd have probably passed or something.
You could have gone in there. Said, this 2 year old, he's got no pen control, but he's doing some bizarre things. He's not actually speaking. I think it must be. It was like it's like the Turner Prize, isn't it? You could have done that, but so I was doing my art A level, and what else was I doing? Yeah, because I was going through a bit of an angst phase as well, because like 96 was a weird point in music, because obviously Nirvana had burnt out pretty much, and then you had this Britpop thing which started off really good, but then you started to get like a load of bands that were just really shit.
So what music was you into then? Was you into the Britpop thing?
Definitely, yeah. So like I think it was a bit of a weird time actually, because we sort of went Nirvana, then there was a little bit like there was a bit of Offspring and sort of a little bit of surf skater punk came in, Green Day, that was hanging around, and then it was like I sort of got that Oasis Blur. And then in doing so, there's like if you look at a family tree of it, you go back the Smiths, then your Stone Roses, Mannix, and then you're like, you sort of like, it was a great time to be into music, I think, getting the NME. And I actually think back now, because I spent a lot of time in my room listening to music and reading about music, and then I had like a drawing on the wall, and it was like a picture I'd done. And it just said underneath, like, I think it was like, "Stop the world, I want to get off," or something, like a proper, proper sad homo. And like, my mum and dad come in every day, like, "That's nice, that's it. Yeah, son's probably clinically depressed, but nice composition." No, I just didn't even pick up on it. But yeah, that's what I was up to really at that time.
So, what is Britpop for? Because obviously I know the bands and stuff, but was it just Oasis and Blur?
I think Britpop was probably a horrendous sort of. They tried to put a thing on the movement. I think what it sort of started was is like there was that sort of after grunge finished, people were sort of looking for the next sort of thing that was going to happen. And I think then you had like, I think people were we went through a weird phase where you were getting like the end of Guns N' Roses, where they were doing like covers. And like you had that sort of weird Hairspray sort of Motley Crue that sort of died out. And then I think what happened then is you had sort of like, Oasis is a good example. So they were just banging away, just rehearsing in under the boardwalk, I think, in Manchester. And they were sort of like, they were just plugging away. And then Creation Records started. And then you had the Hacienda. So I think that was sort of like it all blended into each other.
Yeah.
And then I think they put the term Britpop because it was like a very British-driven music scene.
Because this is the year they played Main Road and Nebworth as well.
Nebworth, yeah. Which I didn't, my brother-in-law didn't, I didn't go to that, but my brother-in-law did. But I was sort of at that age when I was starting to go to festivals. So I went that year, 96, Glastonbury for the first time. There was a festival called Phoenix Festival, which they don't do anymore, which I just remember getting sunstroke. That's all I remember, but it was good. Prodigy and Sunstroke, that was it. The Firestarter, which was ironic, because it was boiling. And I remember just like peeling huge layers of skin off me, like cling film, just like I've probably caused some serious damage. Because you can't really ask people to rub cream on you in a mosh pit, can you?
Not really.
No. It's all trapped at the front. That's what was going on. And then I think, so that was like the big era for me of going to see bands as well.
You went to Glastonbury that year?
Yeah.
What was that like?
It was amazing. I think it was the year, I'm just trying to think now, and was it 96? It might have been the year after.
Oh, well,
we can't talk about it. No, but 96. Oh, was it? Radiohead headlined in 96.
We'll do a search.
I think it was Radiohead headlined. There was Primal Scream. There was, if I've got this wrong now and it's 97, that's going to be really embarrassing,
isn't
it?
It's going to be embarrassing for everyone.
Whichever year it was, I was there. And I remember going down, I don't know who it was. Who was it? No, I'm sure it was Radiohead in 96. It doesn't tell you, does it?
No, it doesn't.
Oh, right. Well, you'll have to just take
my word for it.
Let's pretend it was 96, and then you can give us the anecdote.
Yeah, and it was great because I remember that sort of era of sort of experimenting as well, and sort of falling asleep under a pylon. And I remember doing that, and like the sort of the buzzing sound, thinking, oh, it's just the end. When in actual fact, it was probably me just leaning against a pylon. but that was sort of, because there was a lot of things going on, I think, culturally as well, because that was the year of TFI Friday as well. So that was like when that was like the first, that was like rock and roll telly, really. Because you can look this up on the internet. Obviously, Chris Evans had done Don't Forget Your Toothbrush, then he did TFI Friday, but it was live. But the danger, if you got a live programme, I think the one guest you don't invite on is Sean Ryder, which is he did on week one. And I remember watching it in the kitchen. I was having my tea and sat with my dad. And you could just hear it in the background, like, the top fucking shows them. And you're just like, this is 5:30. Like, just people just watching it. But it was brilliant. It felt like a little bit dangerous, do you know what I mean? I really sort of... it felt like there was a lot going on, put it that way.
A few other shows, that was the year that Changing Rooms started out.
Did
you ever watch Changing Rooms?
You see, I watched, my mum and dad used to watch that. And is that Carol Smiley and Lawrence Llewelyn Bowen?
Yeah, he didn't come into it later on, but it was Linda Barker. Oh. I was a massive fan, when I was two, obviously.
I was going to say.
So go, Gaga. Yeah.
I'm really interested any with cots. Linda Barker, she had quite a weird voice, didn't she?
Yeah.
Like a voice that sounded like she was sanding the floor. Dealing with the vibrations. Maybe that's where she got it from. But there was Linda Barker, there was... Carol Smiley presented it.
Carol Smiley.
But all I remember is these people would invite them in and they'd staple curtains to the walls. So it looked great. It's like the equivalent of what I like about it, it's like a set design, isn't it? It's the equivalent of it all looking amazing, and then you go around the back and there's like there's a bloke with his ass crack out having a fag. Just like stuff just when cameras go, that'll all fall down.
Hang on, this cooker's made of paper.
You know, just complete bullshit. But I tell you what though, it was addictive.
It was, yeah.
It was the first sort of makeover program, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was like before Holmes Under the Hammer and all that type of stuff, and everyone just got addicted to it, I think.
I think as well it was like, well, look at this shit all in now, let's see him pull this out of the bag. But wasn't it like, was the idea that people would recommend people to have it done, friends? Wasn't there like a little twist to it, like they go on holiday or something?
Yeah, it was like a surprise.
Which, I mean, I'm all for surprises, but some it's a bit extreme.
What have you done to be couch?
Do you know, like, yeah, like a Toblerone or something?
Yeah.
You know, not like I've like loads of art college students and a couple of plasterers from Wigan just destroy your house while you're away and come, oh, what's this? Well, it's a wicker screen. I don't want that. Where's my telly? No, we've got rid of that.
There's always like working class families as well.
Yeah.
And then these Londoners would come in and change the house.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't. Yeah, what you need here is that you need like a way of, like, you know, we're gonna make it all out of glass. People see what I've got, love. I mean, but I think we've moved the mattress from the garden, put it back in the bedroom. But the I remember that program distinctively. I also, what else was on that?
Silent Witness.
Silent Witness started, but also you had Reeves and Mortimer used to be on.
Oh, was that Reeves and Mortimer?
And that's the first sort of. That was the smell of Reeves and Mortimer used to be on.
And was that a big
Is
that what started your interest in comedy?
Yeah, I think so. Was that sort of like, in 96 as well, I went to see Harry Hill for the first time. Oh. So there's a lot of things going on. Like, I think...
Was Harry Hill big at that point?
No, not really. He had just done... he was doing like 5-minute spots on something. I think it was the Saturday Show, if I remember rightly. And he'd go and do like 5-minute spots. And then... after that, so I thought, there's something really clever and really funny about this. And me and my mate went to see him at Leeds Playhouse, but it was a tiny room. And I thought I was going to die. I was on the front row, which I'd never done since. I mean, you don't pick on you anyway, but it was just hilarious. And I just thought, I don't know what this is, but this is amazing. So that was that year as well. I'm just trying to think what else I was doing. Because I feel like I'm doing a lot of talking, Jack. But
should we talk about some of the other music things that were that year?
Yeah, so you can do. Yeah,
Spice Girls.
God,
was that kind of the opposite to what?
Yeah, I don't feel this anymore. But I think it's maybe looking back in eyes. I have real hatred, genuine sort of, and hatred for anyone that liked them. I don't know why. I just felt like I think what it was is when you're sort of 17 as well, you've got that weird emotion of almost an adult but not quite. And I think it used to be like, there's all this amazing music out here and you're going to go and see Boyzone and the Spice Girls. Yeah. It used to really annoy me. And I don't know why, it was like a personal affront or something. Like, how dare you put that childish shit in your ears? Do you know what I mean? It was like, get, there's so much potential out there.
Because it just blew up, didn't it? It was like huge. Mad. Like, yeah. I remember my sisters having their photo books and everything. Mm. It was incredible. Like, so I, by proxy, had to listen to them all the time.
Really?
Which, yeah, I kind of grew up around the Spice
Two's
Girls.
Two's probably the age you'd get it.
Yeah. I think that's the age range they were aiming
for. Yeah, but I think, I mean, credit to him. I mean, you can't deny the success. But even, I wonder now, looking back, what it actually looks like. I think it was an exercise in perfect marketing, actually. Mm. It was the guy with Simon Cowell, wasn't it? I forget his name anyway, but he was sort of the manager.
Was it the guy who done American Idol and stuff?
Yeah, yeah. So he was
Nigel, was it him?
No, not Nigel Lithgow, isn't it, that? It's, I don't know why I know these people. I've never met them. That was some sort of head of A&R Records with a cigar. Yo, go, me and Nigel go, yeah, we go way back. He still owes me money on a royalty deal. It's... I don't know, it's not important, is it? Google it, man. But I think what it was is, so you get in like, you had a weird moment, I think, where you had Jerry Halliwell in a Union Jack dress. So that was that side. Mm. So it's very British still. Then you had Noel Gallagher shaking hands with Tony Blair at Downing Street. Yeah. So it's very confused. Everything sort of blended, I think. I don't know if that's happened since. But pop culture, everything...
Was there a divide?
Converged.
Then? So, or do you think, was there a divide, or do you think everyone just liked what they liked and kind of got on with it?
I think it was because it was British as well. I think everyone thought, oh, God, we're starting something here. Whereas in reality, it was probably as saccharine as anything that's come before it, you know. But I think the thing was, back then you could probably make a lot of money out of music. There was the charts, you could make money out of releasing it, whereas now you've got to play live. So I'd be interested to see how that model would have worked now.
Well, it's similar, with, I suppose, what happened with One Direction now, really, in terms of what happened with the Spice Girls. It's just marketing, really. It's not really about the music.
But I would probably, I don't know, I mean, this might be doing the Spice Girls a complete disservice, but I would hazard a guess that One Direction, Ed Sheeran, people like that are far more talented than the Spice Girls were.
Yeah.
Possibly, because well, they have to play
artists,
live.
Were they?
The Spice Girls?
Yeah. Like before...
No, the couple tried afterwards, and I remember seeing...
Jerry had a go.
It was Sporty getting bottled off at V Festival.
Was you there?
Yeah, it was brutal.
How many bottles did you
throw? I didn't... no, well, no, I was filling them up with urine. That was my job. So I was just like a
like
camel.
A
I just had like a camel back. I was like, just keep it coming. I'll just get it through. They were just queuing up. No, I remember it. Because there seemed to be a trend. I know this isn't the year, but I think even in festivals in 96 of like putting on a weird booking. So like you'd have, and I think it was because they had a band who did "Hey Stick You, Your Mama Too, and Your Daddy." It was
Daphne and Celeste.
That's it. God, you've got that on the. You know that.
I know Daphne's. That's...
But it was they put them on at Reading or something.
Oh, I have seen this clip. Yeah, and they're just getting booed off, and because they sang "Ugly," you ain't got no alibi.
Yeah,
and that did not go down well.
I just love the fact they had like something like Queens of the Stone Age on next, and then they just went, "Oh, it's the cue, your mama do, and your dad." Who would go? I'd just go, "No, this isn't right. This
it's
is like
being a schizophrenic at a pop concert."
Well, it's like putting on it's like putting on Mr. Bloom at Download. It's just like it seemed wrong. But yeah, so there was that sort of it was an interesting time. I think music was, I look back now, maybe it's because I'm detached from it, but I think music was more exciting then. But that's might be because I was younger. I don't know.
I think an exciting band that they won the Mercury Prize was Pulp. That was
yes.
They won the Mercury Prize.
Yes, and of course that was an amazing story, because that's like came banging away at it for years, weren't they? Like and 18 years.
Like, one of my favourite songs is Year 2000 now.
Yeah.
Disco 2000. Disco
one of your favourite songs that you can't remember the title.
I always call it that.
Disco 2000.
And yeah. Common People. Like, it was
no,
just,
it's a masterpiece, it's Common People.
Yeah, that album.
Yeah.
The different
Different class.
Different class album.
For someone who's...
Great research. Okay.
So, okay. If you ever interview him, do a bit of reading. But the yeah, the Common People was about him being at art college, looking at people who were
Did you relate to that then?
Yeah, I wasn't at art college, but I think what I did relate to, I'll tell you what was good, is you were hearing Yorkshire voices on songs, which was and like the Arctic Monkeys is a natural progression from that. But yeah, and like I think what it was is it really the people who were trying to be cool but were actually were trying to relate to people who were saying maybe poor, scratching around, but actually they were living off a trust fund or something. Yeah. That's what he was, because I think he was at the Royal College of Art, wasn't he? But then obviously that
they didn't try to be something that wasn't.
That's right. It's about fakeness and stuff. And he just, I think it was just one of those moments where I bet when he wrote that he was just like, yeah, that's just it came together. And I also remember that year at the Brits was when Jarvis did the stage invasion on Michael Jackson.
And he was singing an F song.
Yeah, and I think he objected to the fact that Michael Jackson effectively was Christ. There was no blurring of the lines there. He was pretending to be Christ.
With kids running about.
Yeah, turning water into wine. No. It was like trying to be the saviour. And then he got on. But Jarvis being so lovely. I've never met him, but I imagine he didn't know what to do.
You know him all, mate. You used to manage him, didn't you?
Yeah. He didn't know what to do. So he got up there, and I think what he did was, if you actually watch the footage, he lifted up his jacket and, like, flapped it.
Yeah.
As if he'd broken wind.
Yeah.
And then aiming it in Jackson's direction. Back now, they'd have probably shot him.
Yeah. Yeah,
because it was like, what? I think what it was is he did the invasion and then didn't know what to do, which was beautiful.
And then just one of the Jesus' disciples then, like, follows him around the stage and ends up falling over.
It's
and
beautiful.
Jarvis
it's like
is...
a carry-on film. Yeah. I love it. So, you see,
he got arrested as well.
Yeah.
And, like, they kept him in the back, locked him in the backstage area, and, like, Jackson's people were trying to, like, get him on summit so they could send him to prison. They were working for hours just to try and think of it.
What, a lifting the jacket?
Yeah. Invading the stage. They said he was assaulting the kids and stuff, punching
them
and that.
And how the tables turned. Amazing. Amazing.
But Bob Mortimer
was
there that night, and he acted as legal representation when there was at the...
Yes, because he was a trained solicitor, but not a very good one, apparently. What, did Jack... Jarvis Cocker, did he employ him?
No, like, he was there.
Right.
And Bob Mortimer just said, oh, I'll help you out here. And he acted as the legal representation so that now it could happen and stuff. And
I love that. Just give him a little crumpled up card. There you go. It just says Bob on it, written in biro. One number on the back. Yeah, I love that. It's great, but it's a weird time of year. I think I look back at what I was doing as well. I'm doing my first part-time job that year, 96, which was I was working in a garden centre, and that was funny as well because I kept getting told off.
Did they have plants back then?
What,
in 96?
96, yeah, of course he had. Look at you. It's not that long ago, mate. I'll tell you what's beautiful. It was when you went to see a concert, there was no one on phones. That was that's a bloody joy. Everyone enjoyed it with the faces.
Mobiles weren't about then.
No, mobiles weren't invented. No, they were, but they were huge.
Yeah.
Like, if you'd have had that, like, you'd have...
taken a picture of it.
Yeah, you'd have had a tumour on the other side of your head by the end of the track, you know. But, yeah, you couldn't take a picture, but... your great big things, you had to keep them in the boot. But I remember I was working on a Saturday at home base, I can name it, but it was like a bright green uniform. They still, I don't know if they still wear it. I think they've changed it. And it was the most
subtle.
It was the most brutal uniform to wear on a night bus. It was like you look like, you know when Homer's juggling the radiation in The Simpsons?
Yeah.
That's how green it was,
oh
right? And like people, imagine that. So I worked Friday night till 9, and then I'd have to walk through the middle of Wakefield, which is still like Beirut, even to this day. And there's people spilling out. It's like, you know, the people come out the corners, like it's like The Walking Dead, like just come out. And I was walking, imagine me chasseing through in a bright green uniform with my lunch bag. Just to get the piss taken out of me.
And what was it like?
Like, here's an imp, here's an elf. It's like, it's so bright. It was so green. So then, like, I cottoned on, get changed. I don't know why I didn't do that. Well, for years, I was just putting a jacket on. The trousers look like I had...
You should have just, like, took a different...
I was like, I was walking home with Hulk's legs. It's just bright green. And then, so I was doing that. I worked Fridays, and then I worked Saturdays and Sundays. And I kept, he started off, this is quite funny actually, because my teacher at school, his wife worked in recruitment there, and this is how things work in Yorkshire. It's all like, oh, you know.
Everyone knows
so it. My mum said, oh, Scott needs a job. Scott needs the job. He's annoying me. He needs the job. It's that part-time job. She said, Helen, which is a real name, can get you. So I got an interview and got a job there, and it was just a Saturday job, really, but it started off really good and that. And then, like, I quickly got quite bored because they put me on the till, and then I was just, like, chatting to chatting up another girl, actually, really, who was on the other till, because it was boring. Who buys DIY on a Friday night?
Yeah,
no one. They're all out drinking, right? So it's like one bloke came in for some wood at about 8:45 and then went home. One piece of timber. So all night you're just bored, and you have to, like, sit and look forward. So I just used to chat to this girl, and they had like a partition, not bulletproof glass, it wasn't that violent, Wakefield, but, and I'd like lean over it like that and chat to her and stuff, and slom, which is like laying on me, and I get like, sit up straight, Scott, stop talking. So like, I got quite quickly, I got quite a warning, and I'm quite a diligent person, but I don't know what it was. I just sort of bucked against it a little bit. And then, oh, that was it. We'd have to do these things called spend and save cards. You have to, sort of, I don't know if I'd get into trouble. I'm probably fine. But
you've gone down the path now.
I'm going to have to carry on. And you'd have to give these out to people. And then they said, oh, we want a real drive on it. And, we want to try and get people to sign up for it. So I just to make names up. And then put the cards in.
We've got exactly the same at my work, and that's exactly why. Just make it up. Because you still get your
bonuses. But I'd be like, Mr. A. Pacino. 56 Newland Drive, Mr. R. De Niro. And I'd do all these, and I remember what they used to do at the end of every shift is they'd check your bags because they didn't trust the staff not to nick. Because people would run in. And like glue sniffers or people used to run in and steal tools off that. They'd yank them, like the display models.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they'd run out. So you got a woo, 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 and a bloke just running out with a grinder.
Yeah.
Just like sprinting with like he was in a relay and the grinder was the bat. And he was like, woo, woo. And so they'd check your bags. And I remember one day, and this is how I got into trouble for this, and they tipped the bag up. And all these spend and save cards just came raining down like a shower of guilt, you know. And then they were like, I said, I've got to take these to Mr. Pacino. His whole family's very into the spend and save. But I mean, they'd send me to, I was only like on a Saturday advising people on plants, and, you know, I didn't really care about gardening. But they'd go and ask you, and I'm like, mate, you're asking me to recommend your plants. I'm 16 and I live at home. I don't know anything.
Yeah.
I've never mown a lawn.
Did they not even give you training?
Yeah, you had training and stuff like that.
But you just didn't listen.
To be fair, they used to go on, like, you used to show you how to do irrigation. And she used to say, she was lovely, the woman who was my manager on the garden set thing, because they moved me up the garden bit.
Well, she's here tonight.
Oh, God. They moved me onto the bit to get me off the tills, which was lovely. And then she says, oh, no, you just got to pour the water into the plants. And like she says, don't jet them, man. It's tempting because the hose is like a proper hose. And as soon as the back turned, I was because she's like, woo, woo. It's like, you know, it's a power, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'd just be jet washing these heads off the roses.
Looking at the girl on the other till, trying to impress her.
Yeah. And switch the hose on. So that was what I was doing for a bit of extra pocket money. It was good.
And that was the year of mad cow disease.
Yeah.
Was you affected by that? Did you get it?
I don't know. That's the point. I had a bit of just paracetamol, got rid of it. Just a bit of
honestly, I don't, what was
CJV,
it?
CJV, innit? So it's like, apparently, this is the thing. I was talking to another comic, Kiri Pritchard-McLean, actually, about this last night, because she's from farming family. And like hip, a lot of people had that. They, you know, burn. I don't know if they did. It might have been foot and mouth where they sacrificed cattle and stuff.
No, I think did they burn cows and stuff.
Brutal, really. And it was something to do with in the beef, and it was something to do with, I think there'd been a couple of cases where they'd attributed it to it, and it was like a brain disease. Terrifying. I remember thinking, terrifying as a kid. Because I was 17, I had a brother who was 7, and we ate all right. My mum never bought cheap meat or anything. Yeah. They were saying, unless you've, you know, eating burgers, and I was thinking, oh, I used to go to football matches and have a burger. But like, I still don't know if there's a definite link.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing. I think there's like, You know, I think on like, if you've been vegetarian, I don't think it's the list of things you would cite as a reason for not eating meat. Mm. But I think there's been a cut. Yeah, there was like 10 cases or something, wasn't there? Yeah. So, but it was brutal. I mean, like they stopped doing exports and stuff, and a lot of farmers, some committed suicide. So, like, you know, just because they lost so much
Keep
money.
Keep it light, Scott.
I know, sorry. Well, it's just the reality of facts, isn't it? But, yeah, anyway, I was at home base. And,
So Japan banned import of meat.
Yeah.
And Japan, that was the year they also invented the DVD.
Are they related?
It wasn't related, no. Well, I was trying to do this, that's the reason, a swift link.
Oh, right.
But you know what? You carry on, son.
No. What it is like, that's why they did multi-region as a result of BSE. No, that's really DVD and
DVD.
Shows how far ahead they are.
Yeah.
I was still on VHS.
Yeah. What was watching on VHS?
What was I watching?
Did you like films?
Yeah, I loved them. Trainspotting was that year. Which I was.
For you, 17, that must have been big.
Oh, huge. Although, if I'm being totally honest, well, I'm massively impressed when I first saw it.
Oh, really?
Because I was still enjoying the Tarantino, like, because the Pulp Fiction was 94. There was still a lot of films. I really liked film, and I was watching a lot of older films at the time. But 96 was Trainspotting. To be honest, I really did enjoy it, but it was one of those films that when it came out on video, you enjoyed it more and more and more. And I think it was like, again, the soundtrack was amazing, performance was brilliant. I was just trying to think what else I was watching, but I was watching a lot of comedy. Partridge, Knowing Me, Knowing You, a lot of comedy on and VHS. Now, if you ever watch one now, it's like someone's you're like underwater. The sound quality is awful, isn't it?
It's weird.
It's weird what you put up with. And I remember when still this is years and years later when we moved house and me and my missus got our first house. She said you're gonna have to get rid of your videos. There's too many. And she says, you're going to have to take him to the tip. Honestly, it was the most emotional day.
Why didn't you just get like a...
Because no one... Put them in.
Yeah.
Hold it. But that's just moving the problem sideways, isn't it? But she said, you're going to have to get rid of him. And like, it was awful. Because I was like, I remember just pushing him into the skip and just like, oh, this just invest. Like days I'd spend in HMV getting lost, just browsing. Thinking, I've got a bargain. I used to love HMV.
Shops must have been bigger then, because the DVDs were...
Everything was bigger. Just ridiculous. I mean, it was ludicrous when you think about it, but I remember when DVD came along, people were like, nah, it's going to be a fad, that. We're like the mini disc. Next minute, everyone's buying them, you know. So, Trainspotting was a big film.
Matilda.
Was
that...
It was Matilda? Yeah, see, I was a bit... Missed the boat, really.
Yeah.
It was sort of me... Yeah, I've
young for you, Saturday.
Yeah. Although, you know, what was I doing? I was still, because I had a 7-year-old brother, I was still doing, he used to do Lego. We used to Lego together. I sometimes Lego on a Saturday night, thinking I should be drinking, but I'm making a pirate ship. It's a bit weird. I still enjoy it now. You know, sometimes...
What, drinking or Lego?
Both. At the same time. Yeah. Drunk Lego is amazing. You've got to try it.
Drunk Lego.
But sometimes I just want my daughter to go to bed so I can play with the Lego. Yeah. Go on, you go up and just...
I used to play with my little brother. Most of the time, they just want to build a thing, but you want to really
I've got some drawings done by an architect. I've got planning permission. You're just in the way if you're anything like it. I'm just trying to think what else...
Jerry Maguire.
Jimmy McGuire, yes, Show Me the Money, that was good, wasn't it?
You got to really put some passion into that.
Show Me the Money! I didn't like that film at the first time. It was a lot of films grew on me.
Do you think it was your age?
Yeah, I think as well. I don't know. I think there's a lot of films then that... I don't know if it's a good era for film, 96. Was it that good?
Well, we got Space Jam. Happy Gilmore, good film.
That is a great film. Again, I never really caught on to that until a few years later.
Kingpin, that's a fantastic film.
That's a fantastic film, that. Bill Murray's hair flopping
around.
Yeah,
that's one of my favourite comedy films.
So it's the Farrelly brothers, really.
Yeah.
That's good. I mean, it was weird. I was like...
Farrelly?
Is it Farrelly?
Farrelly, I think.
Farrelly?
It might be Farrelly.
What's the Farrelly brothers? It's an Italian group of filmmakers.
Was that one of the names you used to put on the home base cards?
Gino Farrelly, filmmaker Hollywood, spend and safeguard. I'm just trying to think. Oh yeah, I'll tell you the other thing I remember is my dad had a Vauxhall Vectra, and I was looking on Top Gear. 96 today, and he reviewed it, did Clarkson.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, he does it boring on purpose, but it is a really dull car. And like, I remember, like,
is that where all your holidays were going?
In the Vectra. Yeah. And like, you look at it, like, not the cars now have moved on massively, but like, that car, like, it felt like you were in some sort of, like, when my dad got it, it was like, I've got a new car, I've got a Vectra. And it was like the most, it suited his personality. You know what I mean? It just looks good next to a library. So that would be like a shot, not a girl laid on the bonnet. It'd be like a bloke with his fishing tackle just sat on it, but yeah, it was sort of a weird time really, and like I was 17, so you sort of in that era where
you into football?
Not really, not massively.
Because that was Euro 96.
Yeah, although that was amazing. That is, yeah, and I do remember that, and I do remember
Three Lions.
Yeah, and that was fantasy football. That was amazing. Just that I do remember that because I come back from home base at 9 o'clock on the Friday, and that was Shooting Stars era, because I'd say to my mum, can you tape it, Shooting Stars, and I'll be home, because about half nine I get in, please tape Shooting Stars. She always missed the middle. I'm always missed the start of it, no catch up. So it's like I'd get the tape and it would just be like, and in the final round, and I'd be like, mum, just start it, you know what or what she'd do is she'd start it and there'd be no tape left. So then I'd get to the point where it's like final round, and then it got start rewinding, so she couldn't even cope with the basics of technology. But then I remember fantasy football was on about 11. Friday night telly was great, actually. The Word,
Nevermind Buzzcocks was back.
Yeah, then the Word was like proper post pub telly.
Was that Terry Christian?
Yeah, that was proper post pub telly. So like, I was drinking a bit then, because you can do, can't you, when you're 17? But then, well, you can't legally, but you can, if you know what I mean. But then like 18, when you hit that point, then the Word coming in after being out, trying to pretend to not be pissed, and then like,
I suppose it's quite, you got Britpop, you got especially you're at that age.
Beautiful.
That's the perfect era.
It's the happiest I've ever been. And I say that even above my birth and my children. No, I don't. But like, I remember coming in, like, my mum had fallen asleep with the Word on. And like, just that is the most inappropriate telly. They used to do a thing called The Hopefuls, and there was some guy French kissing an old lady of 85, and she took her teeth out. Oh. And the whole thing was like, but it's funny because they were on the nub of something there. Because he said the thing was then they'd do something extreme and they'd say, oh, I'd do anything to get on telly. And that was the thing. And now you look at like Britain's Got Talent and the freak show things, they weren't a million miles off, actually. It's probably more acceptable to do that than, you know, go and murder a song or something. But I remember my mum watching. I was like, what are you watching The Word for? Can't turn it over.
Pissed Oliver Reed walking.
Yeah, it was amazing. So, and then Oasis were on The Word. Nirvana were on The Word. So, yeah, I remember all that.
And
great.
eBay and Ask Jeeves, remember that?
Really?
The year they were on.
See, I didn't really...
I mean, Ask Jeeves probably only lasted a year. I don't think he's about anymore.
Still Ask Jeeves. That's such a funny thing, isn't it? That would have stayed. Asking a butler.
Jeeves.
You thought that'd stay over Google.
Jeeves, can you recommend some extreme pornography, please?
No, you can't ask Jeeves that. I need to ask you something, Jeeves. I'm desperate.
I've got
to
a spot.
I didn't remember. I don't remember the internet being in the house. So I don't remember that. I remember being addicted to first consoles coming in. So was it PS1? It must have been.
N64.
I remember Street Fighter 2. I remember losing a lot of money at Street Fighter 2 because they had an arcade at college and they removed it because people were just missing lessons and stuff.
You had an arcade at college?
It was one arcade machine. It was Street Fighter 2.
I thought you meant like
and that. And that arcade machine, I reckon, paid for renovations. That was like a really basic funding system, fee-based system. But like now you have like a proper, you know, fee-based. Yeah. Back then it was just, we'll get Street Fighter 2 in and that'll cover us. And it did, because people would just pump money in. And like they'd go, well, I'm up to M. Bison, which was the last person. And like, I've got to get an exam. And like we go, I'm on Bison here. I'm going to complete it. I want to see the programmer's name. That's all you do when you complete it. You just see like a load of Japanese people who've done the graphics. And then you start again.
But you still wanted it.
You still wanted it. So that I remember being addicted to Street Fighter 2.
Did you get a Tamagotchi?
No. See, again.
A 70-year-old lad.
By the time I mean, I was single. I don't think that would have swung the deal, would it? I can't commit to a relationship because I've got a virtual pet.
Needs feeding, it
I need to walk the dog, love. that was the other thing as well, because I was like an awkward age of like going out, but then I was like, I think I was sort of like not serious about getting involved with the opposite sex. I mean, I had a weird period earlier where I'd had a testicle scare where I'd ended up having one removed.
All right.
Which was a weird moment because it was actually called torsion testes, that, which sounds like something that Audi had put in a car.
Yeah.
Like
Vorsprung torsion testes.
Yeah. Vorsprung does torsion testes. So I remember that was like a bit of a weird moment where I was thinking, like, you know, that sort of dinched your confidence. But the weird thing was, when I ended up having liaisons, should we say, no one noticed. How can you not notice that I'm not, that I'm missing a vital component? That's like a car with three wheels. No, I think they're just like, it's like I'm admittedly, I
always, first of all, you, no one noticed you were there in the first place.
No, but I was quite clever. I used to pretend he was like tucked, or like I'd only go out with girls that had access to a chaise longue, so I could just lay there like that and just tuck him away. But yeah, it was weird because I had that weird moment. I look back now and I look at my kids growing up and think, well, they won't have a testicle removed because they're both girls, but that would be really an extreme operation.
They'll have two testicles.
Yeah, right? Well, someone said to me, you know, I've had a testicle removed, so now I've got two like every other man. And so it was like a weird moment of like confidence dinted a little bit. And like, I don't know if I was that interested in the, I mean, you haven't asked me this question, I'm just confessing this, but I think at the time, we went on a first holiday, like a load of lads together, but we went to like Newquay, which was great. And it was like, it was a brilliant time, you know, but it was like and I think having the friends I had around there and having, they were all into the same music and doing that, that probably really helped, because I probably might have gone a bit weird, a bit sort of awkward, introvert, as a result of having that, like a bit of a, it wasn't like kids have way worse things, but it was a bit of a trauma when you're 15 to have something as extreme. And it had a bit of a weird moment when they thought it was going to be like a testicular cancer thing at the time and all that lot, so they dropped that on you. And like, it's quite like, sometimes you sort of have a bit of a weird moment.
Well, they dropped the testicle.
Yeah. Well, the weird thing was, though, they said, oh, it's all right, because when you're a bit older, you can have a plastic one popped in. Like, it's just like I was some sort of shit.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, like I'm a shit Robocop or something. They're just going to build me back up.
Yeah, Murphy. Uphold the law. Bouncy.
But yeah, it was a weird
time. You could have just cloned a testicle, like Dolly the sheep.
Cloned it on a, grew it on a mouse's back. What's that? It's Scott's bollock. We're gonna harvest it in June. It's scurrying round. Brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah. So, cloning of the sheep, was you aware of that at the time?
No.
It must have been exciting in that in 1996. Thinking, God, if we can clone sheep, we can clone human.
I don't know if people. I do remember it being a big story, and I do remember people sort of banging on about it, I think what it was, I was doing sort of more arts, I was doing chemistry and stuff, but I think in the biology field it was a huge thing, but it wasn't the sort of an ethics thing about it, where and really that's still there now, isn't it, the ethics question about it. So they actually cloned Dolly from did they ask a sheep to go into a cubicle with some magazines? Have I got that wrong? Shearing monthly.
Can I have the shaved one, please?
Get a cubicle. How does it work? How did it work?
I don't know. I think your theory is probably right. Just send him in the room.
Yeah, I think it's DNA based, isn't it? Splitting it. But yeah, it was the first mammal cloned from an adult Semitic cell. I'm reading that. I don't know that. That would make me a genius. And in Scotland. So I don't know. I don't know if they're still. I don't think they're still doing it, are they?
Are they still cloning people in Scotland? That would explain a lot.
That would. Well, maybe explain my Edinburgh run. The same bloke with no sense of humour for 26 nights.
But you did get an award nomination at that Edinburgh, did you?
Oh, very good, Jack. Yeah. I did, I didn't, I mean, I don't want to talk about it, but I've brought it with me. Amuse Moose, I need to go back up, you know. You should go up, shouldn't you? Even if just to find a clone
did
sheep.
Did you go up in 96?
No. No, this is the thing. I didn't start comedy till I was 30. 30. Why did I do that? I was just thinking about...
I thought you died then.
30. Oh, I've done that, yeah. 30. So, yeah, performing comedy, I wasn't doing much. I didn't do anything performance-wise.
That's weird that you come on.
I think what it was is I think I was a bit confused about how to do it. I was really good at remembering comedy and reciting it, and I still can. But I really, I'd had nothing to say, really. And I think sometimes when that's a consequence, if you're a younger act starting, I think it's quite hard because you've got to come up with stuff. You can't just talk about, like, you know, what's going on, because sometimes not much might be going on. You know, it's all ahead of you, isn't it?
Or it's already been covered because there's that many people doing it. It's
precisely, yeah, yeah.
But I think it's quite good about your comedy is it's about your life and about the past and stuff.
So as long as I keep living my life...
Yeah, keep living.
And have a past. I've nailed it. Yeah, it's true. It is true. And I think...
And things are on the up at the minute for you. You've just been supporting Rob Brydon. Yeah. How's that been?
It's amazing. Amazing. It was like another...
Is he one of your heroes?
Yeah, it was like a bit weird. I met him and everything. And it's funny how things come about, isn't it? And because obviously I'm obsessed with the trip, obsessed with Coogan. And like, there's a point where you just want to go, you're Rob Brydon. You can't because you're colleagues, aren't you? So I basically, I did two dates for him, and I'm hoping there might be more. But it was just, it's just wonderful, you know, that's why you do it. It's the highlight, really. So it's amazing.
And did he see your act?
He watched for the first 10 minutes and then said, you were getting some big laughs. And said, I was getting nervous. And then just went and that was a terrible impression. But he watched for a bit. But then it was early on.
He's
spotting
Tom Jones now, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, he does Tom Jones, doesn't he? But it was amazing to watch him. He's like a one-man variety show. It's incredible. And it made me realise how far you got to go and what actually is putting on a show for people. Yeah. Like that level of being able to capture a room and keep them captivated for an hour and a half. Just, it was amazing. And a lot of improv. And it was just like, it was just sort of, you sort of pinch yourself a bit. I mean, you know, doing comedy, you never know what, that's why I think it's so addictive, because you don't know what stuff leads to.
Yeah.
You can do one gig that leads to the biggest gig of your life. You can go and see. You can go and do like a podcast about your favourite year, and then end up a superstar. No, but I mean, you just don't know.
I don't think I've pitched this right.
It's fine. You don't know, and that's what's wonderful about it. And I think the key is, I think for me, is just being good enough and being writing all the time, so that when the opportunity is there, you take it to the best of your ability. I think that's the only thing you can do.
I think that's a lovely note to end on, Scott. Where can we join you? On Twitter, on Facebook?
Oh, yeah. It's Twitter's at Scotty B, SCOTTIBEE.
I need to change that. Yeah.
That's stupid. It makes me sound like a beekeeper.
Yeah.
It's like I'm selling honey.
Was Scott Bennett taken?
I think it was, yeah. It's a far successful comic. No, it's not. No. Scott, yeah, SCOTTIBEE, and it's www.scottbennettcomedy.co.uk. That's better.
Scott Bennett Comedy, can't you have that?
Well, Scott Bennett Comedy on Twitter.
Yeah.
Can I change my handle?
Yeah, you can. Yeah.
People have told me, change your handle. I'm going to change my handle tonight. Breaker, change the handle.
Go back in time, go back to 1996.
96. Clone
invent
sheep.
Twitter.
Yeah.
Get Scott Bennett first.
Clone a sheep, shave it into its back.
Right, that's brilliant. Thanks, Scott.
Cheers, Jack. Thank you.